In nomine cinema et TV, Spiritus streaming. Amen.
Hello, faithful.
Welcome back to the, hold on. Wait, where the hell are we?
Hollywood Confessional.
Oh boy, I was like, Toronto Confessional, Louisville Confessional.
Yeah, we've been doing a little traveling. You especially live in the dream.
Yeah, it has been pretty cool. I've been traveling for work on a couple different shows, and in the spirit of sharing with fans, I have no idea if they'd be interested in this.
Of course they're interested. They're fascinated by you, JR. You probably have stalkers who are dying to know where you are right now.
Sorry to bum those people out, but these are stories of things past. I was in Toronto, actually. Megan and I were both there for the show we've been working on for about a year now.
The best year of our lives.
No doubt. It's a crime thriller called Cross, based on James Patterson's best-selling novels on Detective Alex Cross. That's in production now, to be released late this year on Amazon Prime. And I've also been traveling for research on another show, which I can't talk about yet.
So, talk about what it's like. A lot of us get into this industry for the excitement and the glamour, and travel seems like such a big part of that. How does it feel to be jet hopping all over the place to make TV?
How come I always have to share? You were in Toronto, too.
Yeah, but you're way more interesting than me.
Okay, I guess I'll take that. It's been amazing. It's exhausting and hectic, sure, but I love the chaos. And it's really magical to be around these sets. Like, I remember when we were just thinking these things up, like, at the beginning of the room, there's a blue sky period, and you're just imagining what could be. There's nothing on the page yet. There's nothing at all. And now here I am on the other side. All those things we imagined, they're in a physical space. And it's so weird and so cool. I love it.
That is really awesome. I love that part about it too. Although for me, it's sometimes so hectic and overwhelming that I'm also like, I think I made a mistake in this career.
Well, you know, that's a perfect segue into today's confession. I absolutely love the story we're about to hear. It's from a first-time screenwriter who just wants to do what they love and make a living.
Yeah, but when the opportunity arises, they're like, wait, is this what I really wanted?
I love it, and I love how it ends. Let's step into the confessional booth.
Forgive me, Father, for I sold out and I paid the price.
No, I don't want to hear this.
Don't kill our dreams.
Sorry, guys, but this is about to be a confession of cold, hard truth. I came to Hollywood later in life than some people. I was about 30. I'd had a career and a marriage that had both fallen apart within the past 6 months. So I was at a point in my life where I was like, okay, you tried the straight and narrow. None of that shit worked out. So now's the time to try and follow your dreams of becoming a screenwriter.
Oh, I love that. The moment when you're just like, yeah, I'm going for it.
Often followed by the moment you fall flat on your face.
I moved out to LA with about $2,500 in savings. Don't laugh. Don't laugh. I actually thought that was going to cover me for a few months. This was a few years back, so rent was lower, but still. You had to have a deposit. You had to have your first and last, plus all the utilities, gas and food. Not to mention all the money you've got to spend on networking and shit just to find the job.
You either have to have a lot of luck or a lot of support.
Sadly, I had neither. So I went through my savings in about a month. Ended up getting a job doing closed captioning for about $14 an hour. Every day, I went into the office with about a dozen other people. We'd sit with our headphones on, listening to TV shows and typing what people were saying. Sometimes we got lucky with a decent scripted show, but it was mostly bad, shitty reality TV. So you're just listening to people scream at each other for 8 hours.
Ugh, that sounds horrible.
Well, it did have a plus. It required almost no brain power. Like, I basically just became a pair of ears and hands. So by the time I left every day, I still had all this mental energy stored up. So I started writing. Within about 6 months of getting to LA, I finished my first screenplay.
Yeah, killing it.
So here's where the story gets a little crazy. I basically knew nothing about the industry at this point. I didn't have a great podcast like this to listen to.
Hell yeah, shameless promo alert.
I didn't know anybody. I hadn't watched all these behind-the-scenes interviews with the screenwriters talking about how they got into the biz. I just heard rumors. And at that time, pretty much like now, a lot of people were talking about making your own content. Like, all you need to make a movie is a couple of buddies and a camera, but also you need a script that's easy to produce. Limited locations, few actors, no big explosions, you know, stuff like that. So when I started writing, I had all that stuff in my head. I was like, I'm gonna write something I can make myself. I didn't want to have to depend on some big shot producer coming in and being like,
we're gonna make you a star.
I come from a very conventional, conservative town where you go to school, maybe college, and then you get married, get a 9-to-5, and have kids. I never really questioned that lifestyle. Growing up, I had all these secret dreams of being an artist of some kind, but I buried them. I did everything I could just to make the marriage and kids thing work. Then when it blew up in my face, I realized I never really wanted that to begin with. I'd just been doing what the other people told me to do. So by the time I got to LA, I didn't want to do that anymore. I was like, I have an idea, and I'm gonna make it happen the way I want.
Hell yeah.
This is literally the Hollywood dream.
So I wrote a screenplay. I started asking around, making some connections in the production world, DPs, directors, and so on, trying to find someone to help me make it. I basically had no shame. I'd go to all these events, like movie screenings and table reads. They have a lot of those in LA, and a lot of times they're free, and often the cast from the movie or whatever is there. So you can actually meet these A-list stars at these things. So I'd be rolling up on Gary Oldman and Michelle Williams like, hi, nice to meet you. Will you read my script?
Oh, God. That's probably not good.
But did it ever work?
Hell no. But I did manage to get some people interested in the indie film world. Up-and-coming directors who were looking for a writer they could partner with. This one guy named he was super cool. Like the kind of guy who you see and you're like, oh, he's important. Like he just has the vibe. I pitched it to him. Stupid nervous. I did a terrible job. But he was like, sounds dope, let's do it.
Oh my God, so you got your movie made?
No. He gave me some notes, I did them. Gave me some more notes, I did those. Then he was like, oh, sorry, I'm too busy to work on this anymore.
Oh,
God, what an asshole.
So I moved on from that guy, found another guy, then another. I went through this process about 3 or 4 times. Each time, I rewrote the script because I was trying to collaborate. Every time, my collaborator bailed. Meanwhile, life in LA ain't getting any easier. My hours at the closed captioning place got cut back. I had to sell the truck because I needed money. I start taking the bus everywhere, which means basically most networking opportunities are out.
Yeah, kind of hard to look cool at a mixer when you just spent 2 hours on a bus trying to get there.
I'm also crashing in a studio apartment with 2 other people.
Ooh.
3 people in one room. So I've been desperately trying this whole time to save up enough money so that I can afford a bigger place. All this is going on, and then one day I get a call from a crew guy I know. He says he knows a director who has access to funding. He'd sent them my script. They loved it, and they wanted to know if it was still available.
Oh, hell yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, man, I hoped so. But I'd also been through the ringer a few times by now. So I was kind of like, yeah, sure, it might be available if the price is right. And the guy said, cool. The producer's going to reach out to you to set a meeting. So now it's starting to seem real. I'd had meetings about this script in the past, but it's usually saying, hey, let's have a few beers and I'll tell you everything I want you to change. I hadn't had a real professional meeting. So again, I'm trying to play it cool. And a week or two passes, I hear nothing. And then one day I get a call from a very soft-spoken man and he says,
hi, this is I'd like to meet and talk about your script.
We set a meeting at in Burbank, which is like this old diner type place with a giant statue of a kid out front. Kind of creepy if you ask me. But when I told people about it, they're like, oh shit, really? That's where you're going? That's legit Hollywood history. So many deals have been made there. And then I was like, wow, deals have been made. So is this what I'm doing? Am I about to go meet some kind of big shot producer who's going to wine me and dime me and then fuck up my script? Am I selling out?
Hell yeah, you were.
I absolutely was. Like this whole artist thing, whatever I once felt like I needed to say, that was completely gone. I was ready to make a deal for $1,000.
Well, no, wait, what? $1,000?
It was a low budget script, $1,000 for the option, and I was in. So I went to this diner to meet the producer. He had a ton of big credits, and I was expecting some big cigar-chomping guy. He was actually pretty small and quiet, sort of contemplative, drinking an iced tea, eating a salad. So I'm like, I'll have a burger. Rare. I really wanted a beer too, but I figured that might not be kosher. So we sat there, him with his salad and me with my half-raw hunk of beef. We had a really awkward chat about my writing career, which was non-existent. And then he finally asked me about the script and what had inspired it. And here's the thing, like, I'd written this to be a producible script, but in the process, I've fallen in love with it. I fucking loved that script. It was my baby. I loved it more than the child I'd never had.
Yet you were willing to sell it.
I would reluctantly part with it for due consideration, but I want it to be to the right people. So I started talking about it, how passionate I was about the story and the characters. And then I was like, here are my demands. I want an option fee of at least $1,000, and I want to be there when you're shooting it. And he was like,
well, I'll see what I can do.
Oh, that's probably not what you wanted to hear.
I mean, it wasn't. But on the other hand, if it's going to be shitty, you'd rather know up front, right? So I went back to my place thinking, well, that was it. It's not going to happen. I'm going to wake up tomorrow and go back to my closed captioning job, and the script is going to sit in the file on my hard drive until I die. But then like a week or so later, I got an email from the producer, and there was a contract attached.
What?
And it had everything lined up, exactly like I'd asked for it. $1,000 for the option, plus 3% of the budget if it got made. And also if it got made, I was guaranteed permission to be on set. I probably took 100 pictures of that first check. Maybe it was only $1,000, but to me, it was huge. And there was more. I was going to get paid an additional $2,500 to do a rewrite.
That's awesome.
Of course, I had no idea at the time what a rewrite would entail. Turns out that it was over a year of work. Getting notes, applying the notes, waiting to hear back, getting more notes, applying the notes, rinse and repeat. By the time I finally got through it all, the script was barely recognizable. But it was kind of like when your kid grows up to be a teenager. They're huge pain in the ass. They've completely changed. But if you squint and look at them a little sideways, you're like, yeah, that's my baby I fell in love with.
Aww.
I want to remind everybody that you don't have kids.
Still a good metaphor. Still a good metaphor.
Then one day, after about a year and a half of development, I got the email I thought I'd never get saying, we got the green light.
Yes, finally.
At that point, things got crazy exciting and frustrating all at once. So many things were happening. They were picking locations, hiring a DP, holding auditions. They cast as the lead. This guy I'd seen in 100 movies was going to become this person I created in my head. But I barely got to see any of it. I heard it was happening through the grapevine, but in essence, it was like my part was finished. I started to feel left out. Then that feeling got worse because the producer called me one day and he was like,
we're happy to have you come in and visit the set, but we need to limit the visit to 4 days. Choose which 4 days you want to come and let us know.
What the fuck? Only 4 days? Why?
He didn't give me an explanation. I heard later from the crew guy who had initially set me up with these people that the director didn't like me. So maybe that was it. But regardless of the reason, I was bummed. 4 days on a feature is nothing. And again, I just felt like, this is my baby. Why are you keeping us apart?
There's that metaphor again. But I mean, you'd sold out.
Exactly. They didn't have to give me 4 days. They could have given me 2 days or a couple of hours. So I was like, okay. This is still your dream. It's basically a miracle. Your screenplay is getting made. Most people never get to experience even a fraction of that thrill. So get over yourself. Go take a free vacation and see your fucking movie get made. So a couple of months later, about midway through the shoot, I flew up to got settled into the place I was staying. The next day, call time was 7 a.m. I knew they'd have to get people in makeup and everything, so I thought, I'll get there at 9 a.m. I want to show up when they're ready to start shooting, so I'm not in the way. So the next morning, I get up, have a cup of coffee, I'm chilling, take my time. It's about 7:15. All of a sudden, I get a call. It's from the crew guy who set me up with the gig. He's working on the film too. So the crew guy's like,
where the fuck are you?
I'm sitting here having a coffee.
Seriously, why are you not on set? We need you on set.
What do you mean you need me? Nobody even wanted me there.
Just get your ass over here now.
So I drop everything, haul ass to set, which is like an hour away somewhere in the country. I come over the top of this hill and I look down. And I see all these huge trucks and like 100 people scurrying around. And I'm like, holy shit, this is all because of me. All these people are here because I wrote something. This is amazing. But I didn't have time to think about it because I was trying to get to set and figure out what the hell was going on. So I park, get out, rush around till I find the crew guy. And I was like, what's going on? Talking about the lead actor, he goes,
you had an issue with his lines and you brought it up to the director and they got in a big fight. So now the director's crying and refuses to come out of his trailer.
What?
The director was crying?
What the hell did they expect you to do about it?
Well, the thing is, the script had been through so many drafts that people had gotten confused about some of the logic. And apparently, had questions that the director wasn't able to answer, which led him to question the director's abilities, which led to the crying incident. And the crew guy figured, rightly, that I probably had all the revisions in my head, so he told me to go to trailer and to sort that shit out. So I'm 30 years old by this point, but I look about 25. I'm wearing cargo pants and a t-shirt. Several people have already told me to, like, get them coffee, thinking I was a PA. And I'm supposed to go to the trailer of a guy who, well, he may not have been a megastar, but he was by far the most famous actor I had ever met.
Except maybe the people you tried to force to read your script.
Yeah, well, those people said no, so they're dead to me. Anyway, I schlepped across the field to B's trailer, nervous as hell. And I knock on the door, and I hear this voice inside like,
what?
And I basically lose all power of speech. I'm like, hi. Yes, hello. It's B. You know, like, I'm the, what do you call it? The screenwriter? I heard you had, like, some concerns about the script. A moment passes, and I'm thinking, did he hear me? Should I repeat myself? Or maybe I should just walk away and act like this never happened. But then I hear footsteps, the door swings open, and oh my God, there he is. They always say movie stars look a little different in real life. Like they're super short, or they have weirdly large heads or something. But was every bit as glorious as you'd want him to be. He just oozed manliness. He's pretty tall. He was also up in his trailer while I was down on the ground. So I'm just looking way up at him, and he's looking down on me. And after a minute, he finally turned away like he was disappointed and said,
come in.
So I go in and chop it up for a while with asking him what the problem is, if he has any ideas on how to fix it, which of course he does. And that's basically the only time he talks during the entire conversation. And I act super interested, like these are things I have never thought about before. Meanwhile, there's a soap opera playing on his TV the whole time. He's actually paying more attention to the soap opera than he is to me. And I finally give up trying to engage. So and I just sit there in his trailer watching a soap opera in total silence for a good 15 minutes. And I'm finally like, well, guess I better get back to it.
Right, because there's a movie being made outside, right?
Right. And I don't even know if I accomplished anything. Like, if he's now planning on going back to work thanks to my uplifting presence. But I'm clearly not doing any good at sitting on his sofa. So I leave. And I find my way to the video village, which is like a tent where they set up monitors for the director and the producers to watch what's being shot. And the director's not there. But the producer is. And he's like,
well, how'd it go?
And I'm about to tell him I have no idea when I look at the monitors and see strolling back to the set.
Yay, you did it!
It was a pretty good feeling. Only now I actually had to make the changes Bleep and I had discussed. So I only got to watch about a half a dozen takes, and then I had to leave to go write. I finished the revisions at like 10 o'clock that night, and they shot those pages the next day. And that was the most thrilling thing I'd ever experienced, seeing my work filmed with that kind of immediacy. And after years of hashing and rehashing, but I literally wrote some of that shit last night, and today 100 people are making it real.
That's so incredible.
It really was everything I'd ever dreamed of. Of course, when the movie came out, it turned out all those scenes had been cut.
Oh, man.
But all in all, it was still worth it. I sold out, and I'd do it again in a heartbeat.
Ah, that's awesome. Our dreams of artistic fulfillment and financial success live on.
Go create in peace, my child. You know what's the funniest thing about the entertainment industry? How we sell this idea of happily ever after, knowing it is total bullshit.
Everyone can have a happy ending. It just depends on when you stop telling the story.
Right?
But seriously, what is a happy ending in Hollywood? Does it really exist? What does it even look like?
I don't know, man. I love the confession. I keep talking about this one. This maybe it's my favorite from our first episode this season, The Comeback, how the confessor didn't work as a director for 25 years and then finally got back into the game. That feels like a happy ending.
But it's not the end. And that's exactly my point.
Right.
No matter what your goal is when you start out in the industry, whether it's to become a screenwriter or an actor, or a cinematographer or a caterer or whatever, at some point you get your break, you're in. And then the real work starts.
Right.
Not just the crazy long hours we put in when films and TV shows actually go into production, but also the work of turning one break into a sustainable career.
Right. And it's getting harder all the time. And that's the thing. There is never an end, right? I mean, maybe at one point in Hollywood history, once you were in, you were in. And that might have been true for some people. But for most of us nowadays trying to work in the industry, it can be like you're continually just treading water.
You know, this reminds me of a conversation we actually had on the Sam and Jim podcast, on the Writer's Room with Sam and Jim, where they talked about, even in their experience, it's just one wall to climb after another.
Right.
But if you fall in love with climbing the walls, you know, it makes the journey that much easier.
I don't remember that metaphor, but I love it. Now I'm going to use it.
Well, at some point, somebody's going to pick us up and put us on a boat where we get to chill and drink margaritas for a while. But I don't have any idea when that's going to happen. So how do you keep going until then?
I don't know. But for some reason, this thing that happened in Toronto just came to mind. So dear listeners, as JR mentioned, we were both in Toronto as part of the writers group for the up and coming Amazon show Cross. And I was on location one day. I'm trying to stay out of the way as the crew was setting up, and I'm looking around and I see this woman setting up a tree. She was a greens person. That's one of the people who handles plants on set, and they make the shrubbery and whatnot look how you want it.
I learn a new thing every damn time we do this podcast.
Yeah, it was great movie magic. Like, I literally heard the director say, "I love the tree, but is there any way we can make it 3 feet taller?" So anyway, I'm looking at this greens person and I suddenly realize, oh my God, I know her.
Oh my God.
I had worked with this woman on an indie film 13 years ago on the other side of the continent when I was just starting out as a PA. And here we were in Toronto in completely different roles, like all these years later. So, you know, we kind of reconnected and caught up, and like hearing each other's stories about how we got from there to here, it sort of felt like we'd been at war and we were like coming out on the other side of it. I mean, okay, not really war. Like, the entertainment industry is way better than war, but it is a struggle, let's be honest. And if you stick with it long enough, you sort of transition into this like unspoken community of people who have been in the trenches together, and we're all still here. And I don't know about you, but that makes me happy.
Yeah, that's the real movie magic. I love it. And here's to all of us in the trenches when we're in it together and we're here because we love it. Speaking of, our shout out today goes to some folks who don't always get a lot of shine, but they literally carry us through the trenches of Hollywood. And that is transportation crews.
Transpo, we love you guys. Can I just say how many times drivers in Canada saved my ass from freezing to death?
Yeah, and I want to give a shout out to Kevin, who dropped me off at a super sketchy looking hotel and was worried for a full day that I might not come back to set.
Those guys were great.
They're awesome. Drivers and coordinators, the unsung heroes of production. They start hours before anyone else on the crew, and they don't go home until we're all home safely. They have a huge responsibility to see that everyone gets where they're going.
Speaking of responsibility, remind me to confess about that time I was in charge of driving people to set in a golf cart. It was not good.
Oh, shit. Well, that's all we got for you this week. thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, guys, tell a friend. Hit us up at Fess Up Hollywood. Share the secret that you have been dying to tell.
And join us next time for a crazy-ass story about a first-time filmmaker, the dangers of do-it-yourselfing.
We'll see you then, faithful.
See you then. The Hollywood Confessional is produced by Megan Dane and J.R. Zamorathal. Our cast for this episode, Austin Windham,
John Lorenz, Uzo Chijoke.
Special effects provided by Zapsplat and Pixabay. Hollywood Confessional is a Ninth Way Media production. Follow us on socials at FessUpHollywood.